Golf Smarter number 398, published on August 20, 2013, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. During the upcoming interview, which was recorded a few weeks ago, I mentioned that there are 100,000 titles. But I've recently been updated by Audible saying that there are now 150,000 titles. So for a free audiobook of your choice, and there are choices, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
How to play Lynx Golf with Bandon Dunes Director of Instruction, Grant Rogers.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Grant.
Well, it's nice to see you, especially here at Bandon Dunes.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you giving me your time. You're the Director of Instruction here at Bandon Dunes. All four, or I guess five courses. Six courses? Five courses?
There are five.
There are five courses here. And this is a destination resort, right? Golf destination. One of the premier destinations in the United States, because they say this is golf as it was meant to be.
Yes, that's true.
Can you explain what golf was as it was meant to be?
Well, I think it's kind of a reflection of how golf's been played in Europe, in Scotland and England and Ireland, and Wales and places like that for years. And it's a real natural way to play golf, you know, that's meant to be played on fast fairways and fast greens. And the elements are always part of the game. And here you have your choice as far as carrying your bag or taking a pull cart or requesting a caddy. And just a great way to play golf. You know, I think people that haven't played this type of golf really start to enjoy it a lot. And that's why they stay as long as they do, and that's why they always want to return.
And do people stay for long periods of time?
Yes, they do. And sometimes they just extend their stay because they're having a good time and they don't want to leave.
Right, right. I mean, and it's a lot of walking. We played 36 yesterday. And walked 15 miles.
Yep, it's a great walk. I mean,
it's a phenomenal walk,
and it's a beautiful walk. That's another thing. There's a lot of golf here, and I think it's a good experience for people to walk, especially if they haven't walked for a while. You know, if they're used to golf carts and things like that. I mean, this is really different.
Well, you got to train for it then. I mean, if you're not used to walking, to walk, you know, and we had 30 plus mile an hour winds yesterday, easily. I mean, there were five club winds. Mm-hmm. There was one shot that it was 110 yards to the center of the green, and the caddy was telling me to pull out my 165 club. And there was another time where I popped up my driver and went about 60 yards up, you know, straight and came back 30. It was halfway, but almost hit me in the face.
Well, that's when you need your sense of humor. I mean, it's I think that should be your 15th club in your bag or something. Just make sure you pack it in there. You know, just you got to think some of the things you do out there are funny, especially in the wind, or if it's wind and rain. That's another dimension here in the winter. You know, for example, you can get into some really cool extreme golf experiences. You know,
well. We have beautifully blue skies. We're in late July now, right? And when the skies are clear like this is when the wind picks up, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And the predominant wind this time of year is from the north, and it kind of blows all summer and into the fall. And then the day it comes from the south is the day that winter starts. And it just comes from the south and brings big storms in here.
Uh-huh.
And so,
but when it's cloudy and overcast, we won't even talk about the rain yet, but just cloudy, is the winds die down a lot?
Well, not necessarily, you know, it's really? Just, every day the weather's different here, especially with the cloud cover, you know, like today it's like perfectly clear and, but it's a great place to watch for clouds, you know, and, I try to get golfers to do that, you know, out there. And I've been asking them if they've been watching the clouds.
And what are we looking for?
Just something else besides their golf balls.
Oh, you're just saying from the aesthetic point
it's
of view.
It's a diversion tactic. I don't want them to get too upset if they hit a golf ball shot that they don't like.
Well, it's you're right about the sense of humor. You can't come here focusing on scoring. You got to come here, I mean, definitely your first time out, but you got to come here focusing on where you are and the enjoyment and your camaraderie. Different things that you have to focus on so you do enjoy yourself.
Exactly. And I tell people all the time, someone in your group's going to have the most fun. It might as well be you.
It's true.
And armed with that mantra, you know, they can survive you know, just about anything if they just remember that, you know.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate that. Because I'm going to take that out with me today.
It's a great way to play golf, though. I mean, it's true. I mean, you might as well have the most fun in your group.
So, as the director of instruction of a resort area that is not really a golf community, I mean, it's a 4.5 hour from Portland drive, 2.5 hour from Eugene, Oregon, the major cities. My friend drove from San Francisco and it took him over 9 hours. So this is not, you know, I mean, you have to get here. You have to really like make a point of going out here. This is where you're going. What is it like doing instruction here? Because how many lessons does someone take from you in a situation like that?
Well, you know, we get a lot of lesson requests here. I do. And get typical email might be someone that's coming here and they know they're going to be here at a certain point in time. They want to have kind of an intense lesson experience. And they want to play all the golf courses. They want to have this experience of playing links golf, but they want to play better than usual. They want to improve.
So they want a lesson before their round.
Yeah,
and hopefully
well, they want maybe multiple lessons or playing lessons and things like that. I mean, they want to get involved. They want to be better. And they want to be better at this type of golf. They also, a lot of people want kind of to hit the ground running out here. They want to have a little bit of experience with links golf before they tee off. So we give lessons to individuals in small groups or even larger groups called links lessons. And it's really cool because, you know, we're contacted by group leaders or people that are just interested in that concept. And so after an hour and a half, we cover links style golf shots and we cover all kinds of ways to play with the wind and also bunker ideas and putting tips. So by the time we're done, they're able to go into battle, you know, and survive out there.
Yeah.
You know? It's really good. We get a lot of positive feedback from people.
How much of what you're dealing with in these lessons is mechanics and how much of it is mental game?
Well, there's some mechanics in the sense of, you know, sometimes people have, you know, questions about their golf technique and maybe they're not really sure about their bunker play, for example, and they need a couple tips on technique. But some of it's technique oriented, and sometimes it's just simple things like ball position or how to launch the ball, how to change the trajectory, not necessarily with their swing, but ball position and just maybe over clubbing and swinging easy and things like that. So there's an awful lot of things we can help people with here. And the first thing I ask people every single time is what kind of information would help you the most?
Do they know?
Yeah.
Because like if I'm glad you didn't ask me, but of course I'm thinking about it. It's like, what information would help me the
they
most?
They do. They know their game better than I do if I've never met them before.
Yeah, of course.
And so they usually... There's
I want to be more consistent. I want to hit it longer. I want to... Right? I mean, this is the kind of typical...
Mm-hmm. Usually it's kind of funny because I'll ask people about their game and ask them how, for example, how their putting is. And they always say their putting is fine. There's nothing wrong with their putting. But I already know that the putting is probably the easiest area for them to improve in.
Sure. Well, the quickest way to lower your scores,
so
right?
So I know that part. So I usually can lure them over to the putting green and give them a putting lesson that will help them.
Well, we happen to be sitting here in the bar, in the lodge, and right outside I see three guys and a woman out on a practice putting green right now. What kind of tips? I mean, just watching what they're doing, What do you tell people to work on when they're coming out here to play Lynx Golf in Bandon Dunes? What should they be working on with their putting? What do you see, and what can you tell us?
Well, first of all, as you know, after playing Old MacDonald, they're going to run into some very long putts.
Yes.
I mean, and,
you're, I had a 150-foot putt yesterday.
And you're going to wonder if you're on the putting green or not.
Right. It's very hard to tell as well.
I mean, you're that far away from the
hole. Last week was the Open Championship at Muir Field, and I was watching it with the you know, intention of knowing that I was coming here and going blown away by these guys hitting 200-yard drives, and then it rolls for 60 yards. And I was like, does that happen here too? Absolutely.
It can.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone's going to hit a 426-yard drive, though, out here, unless it's, you know, maybe. But, I mean, it seemed like the ball was really flying out there.
Yesterday I had a shot. We were on a par 4, 301 on the coast on Bandon Dunes, going that direction from right to left from where we're looking. And it was like 301 to the green. You had to go over the ravine. It was really a breathtaking hole. You're right on the coast. You don't want to go right. You got to come around. There's a ravine. Then there's an elevated green, you know. And when I got to my ball, it was 10 yards past the green.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I've never hit the ball.
Yeah, that's another
420
well, that's
yards.
Another thing that people love about playing here at Bandon Dunes Golf Resort. And that's, they're going to hit some shots longer than usual, for sure. You know, they're going to hit some iron shots that are farther than usual, but especially their, you know, their longer shots, like their drives and things, are just going to go bouncing down the fairway regardless. And that's the same in the winter as well, because it's all sand-based soil. So it's perfect for getting the ball to roll. You know, there's no drainage problems out here at all. You can play in the rain and have the ball flying down the fairways too.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
And that's the only place that I know of in this part of the country where that can, you can do that in the winter. So winter golf here can be spectacular.
Cold and wet.
Mm-hmm.
That too.
Not so cold. I mean, if you have the right layers,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just kind of like getting ready. It's kind of like going backpacking. This is what you need to take.
Okay.
These are the layers you need. You know, it's kind of like, if you're going on a little mountaineering trip or something, then the guides will tell you, you need this, this, and this.
So you have a caddy and a Sherpa when you go out on this course.
Yeah.
We actually did, because we had a trainee caddy, and it's like, here, carry this kid. That's great. But I want to get back to the putting green. We kind of glossed over it. Let's talk
Well,
about
anyway,
it.
As far as the long putts go, usually what I've noticed about people is they kind of stick to their putting stroke style, and they just try to hit it harder and harder and harder, and they get completely off rhythm.
Yes.
So what I'm trying to show them is, it's like a chip shot. You know, if you have a short chip shot, then your swing is going to be little. If it's a little bit farther, if you've got a little more length to that chip shot, then you have to have more length to your swing. And it's the same exact thing with putting. So if they want to get immediately more distance, then their putting stroke has to be longer. It has to be longer both directions, backwards and then forwards. And so a lot of times people just don't have the length. And you could see, too, as soon as they take it back, if it's going to get there or not. Because usually it's too short. Because they're not used to these really long putts.
Really long putts.
Yeah, really long ones. And then a lot of times they have to pay more attention to the wind. You know, the wind can really be a factor here. It's real easy to leave an uphill putt into the wind short.
Yes.
And I saw
and
that.
And not a big uphill either. I mean, it's not a tremendous amount of uphill, but it will definitely blow back at you.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a good solid putt and still be 5 feet short or something, or even farther than that. So, and so that you just have to kind of like pay attention to the wind. And if it's downwind and if it's fast putts, you know, sometimes you can get some fast putts out here. So people need to really change the pressure, their hand pressure for sure. You know, they need to go lighter with their hands. And then my big tip on speed putting is, if you want the ball to move slower, the putter has to be moving slower. That's all there is to it. You can't have that putter moving fast and expect to be a good speed putter. And then, of course, if it's a breaking putt that's fast, especially downhill or sidehill, then you have to allow for the ball to break. It's going to break more. You have to play more break than usual. So it's really a plus to have the ball going from the high side toward the hole, because it always has the potential to go in.
I see.
Because if you low side those things and hit them too far, they're gone.
They're gone. And some of these, when you say they're gone, they can just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, going.
Yeah, I mean, we had to stop one going into the ocean yesterday.
So,
and, well, plus the undulations on these greens. I mean, you're not going to find very many flat putts out there.
Well, the other thing I've tried to coach people to do is respect a ball that's not in the hole yet, no matter how close you are.
And explain that.
Well,
because
it's not in the hole yet.
Yeah.
And you can't just wander up there and fire and expect it to go in the hole, you know. So I see a lot of people, their putting styles, this is a great place to watch golfer behavior, I tell you that. It's perfect. You know, like right where we are watching these people putt. Okay, or just about anywhere else. The practice center is fantastic for watching golfer behavior, you know. But usually the golfer behavior I'm talking about as it relates to putting is people do all the right things on their first putt, I think. They get like an A, some sort of an A, an A minus, or an A or whatever. Uh-huh. They're pretty good. I mean, they've got kind of some pre-shot routine going, most of these people. And they're doing all the right things. They kind of look and figure out the line, and then they get up and they take a practice swing maybe, and then they putt the ball or whatever their style is. And then if that putt isn't real close, like if it's 4 or 5 feet, they just usually walk up to that ball and putt and miss it. So my theory is that if it's shorter, you have more potential to get it in the hole. So you should go through your pre-shot routine on that one too. You should pay attention to that one. Just don't assume that thing's going to go in the hole just because you're 3 feet away, because everybody knows it's not in the hole yet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And we've seen the world's best four putt from 15 feet or whatever.
Oh, yes,
know?
It's true.
I mean, he won the tournament.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, how do you explain that?
Right.
And even after the four putt, he insisted his putting was never better, you know? I think he's got a great mental coach, I'll tell you that. Well, Phil Mickelson, he's the man.
Right, today he is.
You can four putt and win a tournament like that without a driver in your bag. You're the guy.
Yeah. And how important, like, is it to bring your driver here? Because you don't necessarily want to get the ball launched in the air that high.
Yeah, it's really important to play golf with a driver here. Definitely don't leave it at home. You know, you need a driver here. You're gonna need all your big guns here.
And what clubs don't you need when you're here?
I don't know. I think you need more than 14. You need to break the rules. 14.
I think that should be the golf as it was meant to be. Play with 20 clubs in your bag.
25 clubs. Yeah, that 14 club rule has got everybody confused out here. You know, it's funny because I gave this one lesson. We were playing in like 60 mile an hour winds, you know, and he looks at his bag and he takes one club out. Then he looks in there and tries to take another club out. And I said, but I kind of smiled. I said, those aren't going to help you today. It was just too big a day.
Right.
It's like if you're a world-class surfer and then you see these waves and they're like 45 feet, you know, you're in trouble. You know?
Today I could die.
So that's another thing. I kind of think of Ben and Dunes as, you know, like one of my other favorite sports is skiing. Mm-hmm. And I've had a chance to do a lot of skiing, you know, in this country and also in Europe. And if you're a serious skier, you go to Chamonix in France and you see if you can ski or not. And you have to get a guide, otherwise you'll go flying right into the crevasses.
Hmm.
I mean, it's real serious skiing. Everybody there is there because they're really a ski enthusiast. They're usually very good. And they want to experience, you know, one of the ultimate places to ski. Well, if you're a big wave surfer, you probably go to Mavericks in California, or maybe the North Shore in Hawaii or something. Pipeline or, you know, Makaha or somewhere. So then you can test your skills out and see, you know, what kind of surfer you really are.
I hear
right?
a challenge about to be issued here.
No,
if you're very serious about your golf.
Yeah, I mean, this is a great reality test. I mean, you know, you can be really good somewhere, and then you can put your guns on and come out here and see how it is out here in the wind, you know?
Right.
And but this is like those places. This is like, you know, the best of the best. the place you go if you're interested. And you could be, you don't have to be a great golfer to enjoy it here. You can just be someone that loves golf.
Right.
But you're right. I think part of the adventure starts when you decide to get on a plane or get in your car or get here somehow. And part of it is just the journey getting here is pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
And we used to, for small groups, we used to have an award. It was called the Just Getting Here Award.
And, congratulations, you made it.
Yeah, there was this one guy that was funny. He called me from Norway, and I was telling him about this little group we were assembling, you know, and that he could join, you know. And so it was kind of like this little multi-day golf experience we put together. And I told him about it because he was interested and stuff. But he was just kind of like fact-finding, you know. He just wanted to get some information. He was going to call some other resorts. And finally I said, you know, we have this award called the Just Getting Here Award. And he said, really? And I said, yeah, and if you came from Norway, you would win. And he goes, how do you know? And I said, because I give the award away.
and then he said, I'm booked.
And then there was this little silence, and all of a sudden he said, well, how do I sign up? And he came to this, you know, because of the award, you know. And so it was really funny because we had the award thing at the end, and I had tucked away his present under the table, so he thought I'd forgotten it or something. Oh, he kept giving me these looks, and finally I gave him this really nice zero restriction jacket, you know, just because he, you know, he did make a big effort to get here, so.
And he'll need the zero restriction jacket back at
normal. But normally what we do is just have people kind of like state their case. Okay, this is what happened. You know, I ran out of gas, and I, you know, I had to do this and I had to do that, or I had to change planes, and, you know, we had to, you know, I lost my golf clubs or something. I mean, everybody's got these little stories. And then whoever had the best one would win some, you know, obscure award. So yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome. I want to take a moment here to break for our sponsor, and that would be Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 titles, downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. And for Golf Smarter listeners, Audible is offering a free book. If you sign up today for a new account, you can choose any book that you'd like to have as your free audiobook when you sign. And, you know, if you, after 30 days, if you don't want to do this anymore, you can cancel at any time. But there's not going to be a need to do that because audiobooks are so great. You mentioned that you have listened to audiobooks.
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
And you got a favorite? You got a recommendation?
Well,
for us?
I like the ones that are kind of related to survival.
Yeah, I kind of get that sense.
So Ernest Shackleton, there was one that I was really fascinated with because he was, you know, kind of like on this big adventure, and he got trapped in this ice floe and couldn't get out, and finally he did this great escape, and it's still kind of this legendary thing he did, you know, like. He spent, I don't know how long, in an open boat out there floating around in freezing weather with, you know, people that, without any food or water or anything else, and somehow he survived this thing. And it was really fun to listen to it, you know.
It kind of put you there.
Yeah, it did. It made you feel like you were right in the boat with Ernest, you know. And
wow.
He's the guy.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the book is called South, and it's narrated by Jeffrey Howard, who's supposed to be a phenomenal narrator.
Yeah, I'd really recommend that for anyone, because it gives you some insight into what people can really do if they absolutely have to.
Wow.
You know?
Well, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate the recommendation.
Sure.
Again, South by Ernest Shackleton, narrated by, and it's 12 hours long. So
that's a journey.
I mean, take a journey. You can listen.
You're on the journey.
You're on the journey with them, and that can be your free book. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is spelled AUDIBLE. That's audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, and sign up for your free book today. Thank you. Now, let's get back to the golf courses you have here. So the four courses being Bandon Dunes, Pacific Dunes, Bandon Trails, and Old MacDonald. And the fifth course is the Preserve. Let's talk about the Preserve for a moment, because it's a 13-hole par 3 course. So it's still par 36.
Uh-huh.
But it is one of the most interesting, compelling strategic designs I've ever seen. I walked away going, okay, I can go home now. I thought this was so awesome and so beautiful.
Yeah, I think...
How did that come to be, and how old is that compared to the other courses you have?
That's our newest course, and I think that people, no matter what their ability level is, or you know, whether a beginner or intermediate or advanced golfer or experts, I mean, just about everyone loves playing that golf course that I've ever talked to, you know, because it's really fascinating. And what I like about it the most is you have a real good chance to make a hole-in-one out there because you have 13 tries in a row. You know, there's really no excuse. I mean, you should be able to pull that off as far as
I'm
concerned.
I got close.
Get one. I mean, so a lot of times I give playing lessons out there, and that's one of our goals. You know, we want to make a hole-in-one.
Awesome. And so, but you're hitting into the wind. You're hitting with the wind behind you. You're hitting downhill. Just how did that design come about?
Well, you know? I think the land that they had to use is just fantastic. You know, the views really pretty much overshadow the golf experience.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you're looking at the views and you're going, wow, this is really a pretty place. And so that's usually what happens to people here. I think their overall experience overshadows their score, you know, because you hear a lot of people saying that they love this place and they want to come back and they had a great time here and everything, but they hardly ever mention their scores.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Well, I don't think it doesn't become as necessary after they get involved with the whole experience. The experience overshadows it, which is kind of cool. Mm. But anyway, as far as those holes out there, I think every single one of them is fun to play. And I love short, interesting holes. You know, like there's
and
some classic little ones. Like that eighth hole is one of my favorites. Especially from right in front of that dune.
So describe it for us. Take us
well,
through
you have to do some funny things.
Eighth.
Like I usually use a 60-degree wedge there, and I tee it up really high so I don't hit the ball solid. I don't want to hit the ball solid because it'd go too far.
Right.
And I just kind of like mishit this shot on purpose so it goes kind of flying up in the air really softly. And then you have to kind of like figure out, you have to go just beyond that little ridge in back of that sand dune so that it doesn't go flying too far.
Right.
But you can hit some fantastic shots there. It's just a great, I always look forward to that. That's one of my favorite holes of the resort for sure. I love that hole.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I could play that 18 holes in a row.
Do you have people, you know, like you said, it's every opportunity to get a hole in one, but it's also a great opportunity to practice different shots and pull different things out of your bag. So do you have them teed up? I mean, because you don't, when you're playing your wedge play like that, you don't often get to tee it up. So,
well, if it's a tee, I always have people tee it up.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But I don't think getting the hole-in-one is more important. I think the most important thing is trying to get a hole-in-one.
Yeah, okay.
It's just the trying part that's kind of fun, you know? And then sometimes the golf gods will reward you and something miraculous will happen,
right,
for sure. But
right.
It's just kind of like something that should occur to people, because a lot of times it doesn't. You know, they're not thinking about getting a hole-in-one for some. They've never thought of it. They've never had one, or they haven't had one for 20 years.
Well, but if you think about it, it ain't going to happen. I mean, you don't try to hit a home run. You just hit a nice, good swing, and you know, it'll...
I think trying to hit a hole-in-one works.
You do?
Yeah.
How many do you have?
I've had two out there.
Okay. How many do you have in your career, your life?
I have more than two.
All right. Keep it vague. Be that way.
You should ask me which course I like the most.
Which course do you like the most?
Well, people ask me that all the time.
And I just did.
So I always tell them the same thing. I always say, if I had five daughters, you know, it'd be really dangerous to say I like one better than another. So I'll leave it at that.
So
you
didn't want me to ask you which favorite course?
I did want you to ask me because I wanted to give you that answer. No, I mean, it's just... I think every single golf hole here, I love to play. I mean, no matter what. There's some that I really like to play a lot because they're more notorious. You know, more things that have happened out there.
And it's not like of these four, well, now getting back to the 18-hole big boy courses, it's not like they're all the same just, you know, because they're all on the same piece of property. They play differently, don't they?
Oh, they're really different. All the courses are very unique and different. And I've been here long enough so that I've got to know the architects, and I was here when they were building the courses. And so when I first started, they were just abandoned dunes.
Right.
So then they were thinking maybe they'd build a second course. They might, you know, and then all of a sudden we have five.
Wow.
Know? And so it's been fascinating to be, you know, able to talk to the architects and see their what they're actually doing when they're building these holes. And basically what
this
they're...
This is over like a less than 15-year period, too, that you have the five courses, right?
Exactly.
Wow.
And so what they were instructed to do basically was defend par. Go out and defend par.
What does that mean?
Well, just defend par. Make a defense against the golfers.
Uh-huh.
So it's your offense against their defense. So
well, I've always felt like that the USGA's mission is to be the advocate for the golf course, not the golfer.
Well, every hole is a test, you know.
Yes,
and there's things out there that are designed to outsmart golfers.
Yeah.
And so it's fun.
Is that a design thing? Is that strategically how the architects would design it?
Exactly. I mean, they're determined to defend par against anyone.
Yeah.
And so you just have to kind of... What's another cool thing about all the courses here is we don't have men's and ladies' tees. We just have tees. And we have five of them.
Let's talk. I'm so glad you brought that up.
It is so cool.
Because, you know, I have... And the guys that I was with, they were like, well, how long is the course? Like, it's not relevant.
No.
To me, I decide which tee box I'm going to play based on the slope.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because that... Now I have a consistent thing from course to course, and I know if... You know, I know that if it's going to be like a 130 or 129, 130, 132... I know generally my score is going to be much higher than if it's going to be in a 127 or 124.
Right.
And they're like, no, we got to play the back tees. Like, dude, it's a 136 at the Golds up front here. This is not going to be easy. And
right.
Our score has proved it.
Mm-hmm.
Do their egos get in the way and like, no, I have to play the backs.
Well, I know one thing. We had this, I had this playing lesson with some golfers once, and this one, we were going to tee off from the green tees here. And then, of course, the black tee is in back of that tee. It's back there a little ways. But this one person in the group decided he was too good to play the green tees. He wanted to play the black tees. And so he announced that he wanted to do that. So I said, okay, fine. You go play the black tees, but we're going to play the green tees. So this is abandoned. So after 11 holes, after 10 holes, he announced that he wanted to come and join us at the green tees.
And
I said, no, you're not going to join us. You're going to go play that black tee. And I sent him all the way back. There's a back tee there that's so far back, you don't even know where it is.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
I said, keep going. And he was back there.
This he guy, fell off the edge this, of the cliff.
This guy,
keep going.
This guy was so miserable by the time he finished. But you know what we do here?
You seem to get a lot of delight out of that.
Well, he was the one that started it, you know? So I think the main thing is... you know, some of the matches we have here are really classic. Like you and I could be partners and we play two other people like best ball.
Mm-hmm.
But we on the even holes, let's say we would pick whatever tee we want to tee off on. And on the odd holes, they can pick whatever tee they want to go
on. That's fun.
And you could base it on, you know, the wind conditions or just what kind of players you're playing against or whatever.
I like that idea.
And I tell you what, there are some classic places, you know, forward and back that you can pick to play, and it's fascinating.
I'm going to bring that up with my guys today because we've been doing teams of two against one another.
That's a good way to play.
And say, all right.
You could go anywhere you want.
So just rotate or whoever wins last hole or rotate?
So you and I would be like the odd number holes, let's say.
Okay.
Number one, we'd pick the tee. Then number two... Doesn't matter if we win or lose. If it's their pick, they go first.
Okay. Oh, and they go first and they pick mm-hmm. the tees.
Yes.
Okay.
So on the
we'll do that.
So odd and even. And it's a fascinating way to play. It's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Give me a quick bunker tip. You were talking about, you know, giving instruction about bunkers.
Well,
we got a little bit of time left.
Yeah, the bunkers. First of all, I think you have to make the right sound in the bunkers. The club has to make the right sound. You have to kind of like... have the right kind of thump into the sand. You know, you have to give the sand enough energy for that ball to react. Because I've given lots of bunker lessons here, and the first thing that I notice is if the person's struggling, usually the follow-through is too little, or the swing's too little, or they're hitting too far behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And the sand here is, it's like beach sand, except we can't use the sand on the beach. We have our own sand source here. But it's a different kind of sand than people are used to. So... I think focusing on your follow-through will help you a lot. You know, try to get your follow-through over your leading shoulder. Like if you're right-handed, if you're left shoulder, try to get your hands to go higher than your left shoulder if you're right-handed, because at least you have a chance to get out then, you know, because if you stop it lower than that, probably that ball's not coming out of a deep bunker here.
And there are some really deep, I have some photographs of my buddies in bunkers, and it was,
they are bursting into tears.
It was so.
The other thing is, I think, you know, I think it's really a plus to have at least a 60-degree wedge in taking into those bunkers, because it gives you a big advantage. And I've had people say things like, well, I have a 58-degree, and if I open it, I've got a 60. Well, I like the fact that I've got a 60, and I open it up, I've got more than a 60. That's what I like.
Yeah,
and I never hear people saying that. But it's, and then getting back to Phil Mickelson for a second, you know, he everybody knows how good he is with those lob shots and hits it over his back.
He's great.
But he, I tell you what, I don't think he would play golf without a 64-degree wedge. He just wouldn't. If I told that guy, okay, you cannot play in a tour event with a 64-degree wedge, he'd probably not skip it. He would not play in it.
Who knows? They may make it illegal yet.
And I don't know anybody. I've hardly ever met anybody here that has a 64-degree wedge. It's amazing. And he
you really do need 25 clubs in your bag.
Well, he's got five wedges.
Yeah.
Come on now. You know, that's a lot of wedges. So,
it really is.
So I think that people need at least, because sometimes they go in there with the wrong equipment.
Yeah.
You know, they go in there with a 52-degree wedge or something, and it's just a lot harder. But the other thing is, I think on your backswing, people need to be a little bit more upright. The club has to come up instead of back, because if you take the club a little steeper on your backswing, then you're going to hit closer to the ball. Because a lot of times people struggle because they hit too far behind it in the sand, and they keep doing that, and they can't get out, and it's really frustrating. And it's because the club's going back instead of up. They need to pick the club up steeper, and so it's easier if you do that to hit a couple inches behind it and follow through.
Phenomenal tip. Phenomenal tip. Thank you.
Yep.
Well, Grant, thanks again for your time. You have an amazing practice facility here as well. Please, let's close it out by you offering an invitation to our audience to come join you here and take a lesson and come out and play at Bandon Dunes.
Yes, pretty much I want the audience to all consider coming here as soon as possible, staying as long as you can, and when you get home, come back as soon as you're able to. So we'd certainly like you to do that. We know that if you do, you'll have a great golf experience. And then, meanwhile, always sign up for a links lesson at least, okay, because we can help you over here.
He is the nicest guy. And I can't wait to meet up with him again, because he's been writing to me saying, I want to do that again. And I'm like, yeah, we'll do it on the phone. I'm not coming to Bandon all that quickly, but I definitely would love to have him back on the show, because I thought he added some insights that should have been obvious but weren't, and he was able to describe and be succinct about it, so it made all the sense in the world to me. I enjoyed it, and I hope you did too. But our journey to Oregon is not yet complete, because next up, for members only, you'll meet one of the caddies, or loopers, that held my hand during our three 18-hole rounds at Bandon. Ted Joyce, fun guy, good golfer, and also carries the bag of Champions Tour player Brian Henniger. Now, as much as I pushed for Ted to give up some dirt, he doesn't cross the line, but he does share stories of what it's like to work with a pro, how he got started, then what it takes to be accepted by other pro tour caddies. We recorded this immediately after our full day of 36 holes. We're a bit goofy and exhausted. And since there was one more round left at Bandon, I got more tips from the trenches on how to play at Bandon Dunes. And then just to fill in the blanks, this interview with Grant was the first thing the next morning before our final round that we played Pacific Dunes. I also want to send out public thank you to Eric Peterson, who's the director of communications at Bandon Dunes, for helping me set all these interviews up. Thanks, Eric. That was very, very kind of you. And one more thing. I'm going to put a link of my photo journal of our rounds there. We had two caddies and a caddy trainee. Well, he was my Sherpa. He was the one that was carrying my camera the whole time, and the lighting, the clouds, the terrain, it was really photography heaven as well. So I got some really good shots and some goofy ones. And you'll even see how close I got to a hole in one. So please check out my photographs at golfsmarter.com. Now, after Bandon, we'll travel back to Portland, Oregon, and celebrate episode number 400 with our old buddy Jim Waldron of Balance Point Golf Schools. Jim has consistently been one of our favorite instructors, and this is the first time that we meet in person. So after he had me take a couple of swings for him to look at on the range, then we went out for a Thai food dinner and recorded for over an hour during the meal. As always, he provides the simplest and easy-to-grasp concepts that have been so effective for me, and I know for many, many Golf Smarter listeners, so you're going to want to stay tuned for that. And also, if all goes according to our production schedule, episode number 400 will include some big announcements regarding golfsmarter.com and hopefully how you can find a new way to enjoy this podcast every week. So, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.